From now on, we talk about everything.
Yeah, whatever bugs us, we can't let anything slide.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 7, Episode 27, Unpleasantville. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
You know, Dave, you react like 27 is a lot of episodes, and yet if I told you how many more there still are to go.
Five.
No.
More. Oh,
really?
Sweet summer child.
Yeah, remember we talked? No, you don't remember. We talked about it, but they borrowed some episodes from season six for the beginning of season seven. So it's like
that does ring a bell.
Late, there's
okay. So 38.
I think that's right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Anyway, welcome, listeners, and hello, Sarah.
Hello.
Before we get into this episode, we want to tell you what's happening on the Patreon. Again with this episode 179, dropping February 9th, is going to be Let's Watch the Katie Holmes Day episode of AP Bio, that is season 3, episode 8, Katie Holmes Day, on Peacock. It's a journey. I'm really interested to see what Sarah thinks about it, because it goes places and it's very silly. Dave and I watched it again last week, and it was kind of a joy to revisit it for me. Will it be for my co-host? You will find out on February 9th, so make sure you're in that Patreon. When you do, go to againwiththispodcast.com/club to sign up and to find out more about all of the perks that you get if you join us on Patreon.
Yeah, and if you've been waiting for us to expand into the fringe/I-don't-want-your-laugh era of extras, it is upon us.
Mm-hmm.
In all the senses of that word.
It surely is. Let's start with our B plot of Melrose Place. Lexi's new plan to break up Megan and Ryan might actually work, and it's finally Jane's turn to enjoy the beach house. On a rainy morning, Lexi has an early appointment with a reluctant Dr. Visconti to discuss whether she should feel guilty about how she's manipulating Megan, because can't a woman pursue her Mr. Right, which in Lexi's case is Ryan, according to her sketchy computer program? Dr. V is horrified on Megan's behalf to realize which Ryan Lexi is talking about, but Lexi shrugs that if Ryan's not meant for Megan, then Lexi doesn't have to feel guilty, because actually she's doing Megan a favor by wasting her time. Puts her coat back on over Dr. V's protests, as one wonders why she drove all the way down there first thing in the morning when she could have just said all of this to herself in a mirror, which I assume is what she does at the condo all day anyway. Dr. V points out all of the ancillary considerations, but Lexi already knows that once she gets Ryan, she just won't ask him to marry her, and Dr. V visibly gives up, as you can see in the visual aids, all but throwing up his hands physically. Not quite, but almost.
Mm-hmm.
And the next day, Lexi comes to get Megan for a Century Bride meeting in Santa Barbara, but Megan can't find her shoes, and a repairman is there to deal with her burst pipes and tells her to tell Amanda they all need to get replaced. Lexi, who I think only ever lived here for 5 minutes, has views. Clip two.
You know, I think I pay you enough to rent a place with decent plumbing.
Well, I'm hooked on the building. It's charming.
Charming? This place needs an overhaul, and it's filled with obnoxious people.
Well,
no lie detected.
Nope. Often wrong, right for once.
Mm-hmm.
Enter Ryan looking for his briefcase. He has the shoes that Megan's been looking for. He also finds one running shoe that he was looking for of his, which I don't know how he was just like, well, I'll just walk out with one. Like, what?
And I'll hop home? What?
But Lexi has to note that these problems would be solved if Ryan and Megan just made the big commitment, and Megan's look at this is complete horror while Ryan audibly scoffs, but Lexi continues making her very logical case. And after Ryan has left, Megan turns on Lexi, who is unapologetic, because she says Ryan's a top dating prospect and Megan needs to lock him down, but for now, they need to get to Santa Barbara. And then we're in Malibu as Jane moves into the beach house. I don't know how she has a whole truck's worth of stuff to move in all of a sudden. She came from Chicago with, like, a suitcase. But anyway.
Also, it's all the same furniture that was there the whole time. Like,
they've
never changed the dining room table. I am not a crackpot. You could see it in the visual aids.
She does at least mention the previous owner added a room, so at least like someone acknowledged it, which I was happy about, because they did, and they tried to pass it off like we didn't tell, but I could. Anyway, she's distracted by a neighbor named Brad, who immediately hits on her. And after Jane has dismissed him, Amanda pops over with a plant and some work that can't wait. And hey, when Kyle and Amanda rebuild the house that Kyle burned down, they'll be just down the road. And Jane pretends to think being neighbors with Amanda is going to be great. Whatever happens in Santa Barbara, we don't see. And the next time Megan's on screen, it's at the Rock and Roll Club, where Michael asks, apropos of nothing, if she thinks he is shallow. Actually, she thinks he's low-key kind of deep, I guess, in that he's not actually as big of a shitbag as he seems. I could not follow her logic here, but fine. She's looking for Ryan, and since Michael has apparently had a few, he starts talking about Ryan as a square-jawed narc who probably makes them have sex according to a strict manual, which, like, no, that's Kyle. But anyway, Ryan walks in just as Michael is lightly flirting with Megan, and aggressively intervenes. Michael pushes back, telling the story of how they met until Megan cuts him off. But Michael won't shut up, saying he made an honest woman of Megan, which Ryan still hasn't. And he wonders if Ryan has the wedding willies. And that's when Lexi appears to pull Michael onto the floor. While dancing, they argue flirt about whether Michael or Ryan is a better long-term prospect. The way they have to, like, position the camera so that they're both in frame and, like, sort of moving, but also not really, but also there's no music because they can't be on the track. Like, all of this is very strange, but you can see a little bit of it in GIF form in the visual aids. The next day, Megan is working on the bridal account in her fake office, can't help lingering over some of the gowns in the catalog, and then fantasizing herself feeding cake to Ryan on the big day and hearing him call her Mrs. Ryan McBride. Barf. Michael interrupts to ask her to dinner and a movie, but she and Ryan are going to Jane's for a housewarming dinner. Michael whines about not being included, and Megan hugs him and promises she'll always be his friend, which is when Lexi comes in, pretends to care about people fooling around in the workplace, and as he leaves, Michael says this, clip three.
Oh, you know what? I've been thinking about what you said about me not being happily ever after material.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's something I wanted to say back to you. Look who's talking.
I don't know why anybody finds him attractive.
Well,
don't you?
Watch Lady Killers, then get back to me.
Yeah. Also, writers, please just mush them together now and write them off somehow. It just makes sense.
Yes, it really, really does. Lexi goes on to say that every time Megan is nice to Michael, she endangers her relationship with Ryan and that it is time for Megan to marry him, period. Megan would like to know why everyone's talking about marriage all of a sudden, but Lexi tells her not to pretend she hasn't thought about it and adds that she should ask Ryan to marry her tonight. And it is so funny to me that this is the conflict in the relationship when normally a soap opera, especially at this time, will not even entertain the idea that a woman can just propose to a man. You know what I mean?
I
like, this is how they decided to say what his issue is. Like, it's so complicated. Ugh.
Yeah.
Anyway, Megan looks like she's considering it, but she's not going to do it at Jane's boring housewarming party, also attended by Amanda and Kyle. Kyle toasts to Jane's new life, and Jane admits she doesn't miss having everyone at the complex in her business. Megan loves the building because it's where she met Ryan. Barf. Jane wants to build steps off the deck and wonders if anyone knows an inexpensive handyman who could do it. Well, in this episode, Kyle's suddenly handy with construction, so he could do it. He was thinking about pulling back from the Rock and Roll Club and Kyle's anyway. And as Amanda chews her lips, Kyle says he can build the house during the day and help Jane at night. And there's more to the scene. We'll get to it in the A-plot. But for now, Megan wants to take a walk on the beach. And at said Rock and Roll Club, Michael is drinking alone when Lexi shows up. Clip four.
That man drink?
No.
No.
No. He notes that she is always insulting him. She says it figures that he is in a bad mood because he's a loser in love. And Michael says this, clip five.
I am not a loser, just a rat in timing. And that's the difference between winners and losers, isn't it? Timing.
Really?
That's right. Look, Jane and I got married when we were too young. And then and Kimberly, I married her just on the brink of her going psycho. And Sid was just more interested in being a madam than she was my wife. then Kimberly again, but that time she was terminally ill. And then came Megan, and I was really in love with her. But, well, I cheated on her, and she left me. And then when Coop finally dumped her, and she told me that I was her one true love, Jane came back in town and we got engaged. Now that Jane's left town, Megan thinks she loves Ryan, and they could be married.
Hey, Michael, that's not gonna happen.
I just wanted to hear that clip so we could marvel at how close Calabro comes to almost selling that as not a totally ridiculous itemized list of an entire soap opera's romantic partnerships for him. Like, he almost just makes it sound like a life well lived. Like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of justice for Sydney. I don't care for the dismissal there, but.
Yeah.
I think Laura Lane's probably fine with that gloss. So, Calabro, probably the MVP of the series.
Yeah. I'm not sure that that timing works out either, because I think they were already divorced by the time all that Madden business started.
Yeah.
Anyway, Lexi says Ryan and Megan getting married is not going to happen because Lexi's timing is never off except for her acrimonious divorce and her broken engagement. But other than that... Never. Back to Megan and Ryan's romantic beach walk. Megan in her weirdly frumpy coat feel bad that Jane is living alone in such a romantic place. Because Megan doesn't want to live alone anymore. Clip 6.
I love you. And I think what we have is special. And I can't believe I'm even thinking about this again.
Wait, thinking about what, Megan?
Thinking about spending my life with someone, making a commitment.
No. Please don't ruin everything.
I'm sorry. I thought we were feeling the same way. Just got really cold out here.
No, I didn't mean it to sound like that. Maybe I'm old-fashioned or something, but I'd like to do the asking if you don't mind. I'd love to spend the rest of my life with you. Would you marry me?
Yes.
Go get married. Bye. No one cares.
Do it today. Go on your honeymoon. Beat it.
Don't come back. Cares? The next morning, Megan calls Lexi to tell her all about the engagement. Lexi assumes that Megan did the asking, but she says she started to, and then Ryan asked her. And Lexi's like, wait, what? As Megan keeps burbling on about her plans. But then sees Ryan getting stuff out of the closet. Megan says she thought they'd stay in bed all day, but Ryan has to go to New York on business for a few days. So Megan gets rid of Lexi because of Ryan's sudden business trip, and Lexi's like, of course, and then gazes at a framed photo of her and Ryan at the resort with their umbrella drinks. Back at Megan's, she goes on about the engagement party she wants to have and the people she wants to tell as long as she is not freaking Ryan out, and he promises she is not and takes off. And in the courtyard, Amanda exposits what we already knew. If Ryan's going to New York, it's nothing to do with work. Back to the beach house, Jane complains to Kyle about her pushy neighbor Brad and his many pretexts for intruding on her. Kyle says that if she never got hit on when she lived there with Michael for 5 minutes, it was because she seemed unavailable. So Kyle goes inside, Brad jogs over, and this time he's got a fucking kite. And Jane's getting ready to let Brad down easy, calling him the wrong name a second time intentionally, when Kyle comes out. Clip 7.
Oh, sweetheart, that was the best sex that we have ever had. Oh, we got company. How you doing? Jane's boyfriend. We'll be spending a lot of time out here at the beach. Wait a minute. Are you Brad? Thanks for the taffy, man. Had a couple of pieces in bed last night. It was good.
It was good.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Okay, well, catch you on the beach. Maybe.
That was brilliant. Thank you.
Yeah, you have no problem.
Aw.
Yeah, it's cute.
I mean, it's dumb, but they are cute since they are married.
That's what I mean. The two of them being cute together is cute. They've hardly had any scenes together this season at all. And then we're in Poughkeepsie, in some kind of a building that will become clear in a moment. A nun recognizes Ryan. He is there to see Sarah and promises not to wake her. And Sarah, this one, turns out to be a little girl clutching a doll. And the nun is like, there she is, get out of here. But Ryan's like, clip 8.
Let me sit with her for a minute. She is my daughter.
Oh no, I gassed too hard and I have a cold. I'm going to make myself cough.
Let me just fill in by saying that this particular Sarah certainly was in no danger of waking up, even with this so-called revelation. Look, show, we don't care.
We don't. No.
It is a little weird that apparently he has also entered a time portal into the 1950s based on this nun's, like, nighttime gear.
Uh-huh.
But other than that, don't care. And naming a character Sarah will not work.
Yeah, when you in the tease from the previous episode were like, and someone has a secret kid, I truly, even though I'd already prepped this episode, was like, they do? And it took me like several moments to remember who, because he's so forgettable. Him? Like, he's not interesting.
No. What's the actor's name again? John
Hames Newton.
Marshall Von Toasten.
John Hames Newton.
Thank you.
Partly that Hames is not a name. Like, it's almost Haynes, but then it's not. H-A-Y-M-E-S.
James Newton Hyman. I don't even, who cares? Moving on.
Exactly. On to our A-plot. Eve has issues with Dr. Shulman and Amanda. We open on Amanda and Kyle fooling around at her place as she promises for, like, the 12th time that nothing will ever break them up again. Suddenly, rain drips through the ceiling onto her head, and she starts bitching about Michael having fucked up the roof and the good money she spent to fix it, although not good enough, apparently. Mm. Kyle tells her she can't let a leaky roof ruin her happiness, although I will note, he does not offer to switch places with her while they continue fooling around so the water is dripping on him instead. But it doesn't matter, because then Michael shows up at the door with a list of all the things in his apartment that are broken. He is followed by Megan, whose pipes just burst again, as we heard about in the B-plot, and by Peter and Eve, whose heat is out. And I think that's everybody who lives there. So Kyle takes a moment to thank Peter for the extremely probably illegal helicopter ride that helped Amanda and Kyle reunite at the end of the last episode. Peter's happy everyone's friends again, and then walks Kyle to the kitchen, quietly asking whether he thinks Eve and Amanda will be friends again, too. Well, clip 9.
I'll put your complaint on the list.
Amanda, how long are you going to shut me out? Just talk to me.
If that's why you're here, you're wasting your time.
You know, the temperature in our apartment's just about as cold as that was.
All right. Come on, dude. It's like,
she shoved her out a window and she had a pregnancy loss.
Yeah.
Everybody check yourselves right now, please.
Yes.
You're on a soap.
I mean, Eve didn't do the shoving, but she was the reason the shoving occurred. So shutty.
Yeah.
After the credits, Kyle and Amanda are goofing around on the beach. When they are done montaging, they promise to be completely honest from now on. Kyle regrets hitting rock bottom to recognize all of the expectations he's been trying to live up to all his life. Amanda doesn't expect perfection, and they will have their family someday. Amanda's in no rush now. Over to the hospital, Michael's working in the ER. Dr. Shulman is back, and it's to countermand his orders, directing several patients to be sent elsewhere because a conglomerate called Good Hope just bought the hospital, and she is in charge of peer review. As a side note, according to reporting a couple of weeks ago in our timeline, aka reality, corporate ownership of hospitals results in an increase of treatment errors, sometimes as high as 25%. Given that Wilshire Memorial already employs Peter and Michael, this is a number they cannot afford to have rise any higher. I am just saying.
No.
So good luck to all. Mm-hmm. Teenager standing by watches as Dr. Shulman and Michael argue over the hospital's obligation to treat uninsured patients. When Peter arrives, Dr. Shulman assumes that as chief of staff, he will take her side, but he's like, what are you doing here? And then the kid interrupts to say his dad, one of the patients in question, lost his insurance when he got laid off. Are they going to let him die because he's poor? And Peter says no, and then yells to the room that no patients are to be transferred. Well, Dr. Shulman glares. She tries to override his authority, but he will not allow it. Peter and Michael both know as she leaves, she is a pit bull of revenge who definitely is not going to drop it. And also, if you think this kid who got a line for some reason is going to come back after Peter saves his life, he is not. We never saw him again.
No.
Over to the rock and roll club, where something called Swirl 360 are badly miming their hit? Question mark? I have no idea.
Yeah, it eats clocks, so I'm fine with it. But also, who?
Yeah. You can see them in the visual aids and see if any part of it jogs a memory loose from the late 1990s. Mm. Eve is on the payphone like 4 yards away from the stage, trying to have a conversation with Jackie, who is at work weeping about the trip she and Eve never ended up taking. She asks how things are for Eve and Peter, and Eve says they're great, thanks to Jackie. Trying to get her shit together, Jackie says she has to go before her boss hangs up the phone for her. But then Eve can't worry about that because Kyle is there, and Eve asks whether she should clear her stuff out or if she still has a job. And I know we've talked about her treating, like, the dressing room as if it's her office at the club. I don't even think house bands move into clubs like that, but sure.
No.
And Kyle just stares flatly and lets her keep talking until she asks if Amanda knows how sorry she is. Which is when Kyle says he thinks Eve should branch out and start playing other clubs. And Eve swallows her tears and agrees. And after he has already walked away, clip 10.
Whatever Amanda wants, Amanda gets. Isn't that right, Kyle?
Well, she wanted a baby, and she didn't get that because of your big mouth, so no. And also, this act out seems like they're setting up some kind of big revenge plan from Eve, which, like, does not happen, at least not in this episode. So I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, or maybe she's starting to lose it. I mean, they need to start signaling the end game because I am so close to falling into a coma of my own.
After commercials, Kyle, Amanda, and Frank, the architect, are touring the new house site, Kyle expositing that he used to work construction as a teenager. Frank thinks they will be able to move into the place in about a year. Amanda was thinking it would be the end of summer, but Frank's like, that was the idea before it got burned down, remember?
Do they remember that? Like, isn't this a crime scene?
Yes.
How? What?
Yeah.
Why?
Yes.
Who?
Arson was committed. Like,
was committed.
We're not.
But he committed it on himself. Does not really matter.
Does not. Anyway, Kyle asks how they get back the lost time. And by the way, asks it a lot more tersely than I would if I had been the one to burn it down. Just by the way.
Yeah.
Frank says $100,000 could get them there, but, you know, Kyle and Amanda don't have it. Amanda looks at the plans to see where they might gain some time, but when she asks about simplifying the kitchen design, Kyle is already over with some of the guys helping raise a wall or whatever, and Frank comments that he looks like he belongs there, and Amanda has a lot to think about. Back to the ER, Michael and Peter saved all of the patients from the mass casualty, and a night like that reminds Michael that he became a doctor to save people, and Peter's also been reflecting. Clip 11.
All night, I'm thinking of my old man in there. He never had insurance.
Okay, you're from Texas. We get it. Saying it. Insurance, not insurance.
Like, why do we have a plot about Medicare for all? Like, I don't disagree, but not why we're here. Mm-mm. If you don't have enough things to write about, just kill off a bunch of people and end the show.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I vaguely remember that, like, HMOs were a scary thing around this time that people were starting to get their heads around. And, like, I think this was the beginning of when insurance started to get really bad, if I'm remembering right. I mean, whatever. But yes, that, corporations taking over hospitals was an issue then as much as it is now. So all of that said, that's no excuse for it to be covered on Melrose Place. Like, take that shit to ER. This is not the time. But anyway. Peter thinks if his father had regular checkups, he might still be alive. And when Peter goes to his office, Eve's asleep on the couch. She hugs him and says how proud she is of his big night. And Michael, who was also involved, mooches a hug as well, which Eve gives him, despite much larger sweat stains on his scrubs than Peter's. And when he hears what happens with Kyle, Peter says he'll talk to him, but Eve doesn't want him to. And then Dr. Shulman comes in with Barry from the board, lightly shading Peter's latest wife, which is rude because Eve is only the second wife Dr. Shulman would have met. Like, again, it's another situation. She doesn't watch the show. Before getting to business, Peter cost the hospital $100,000 in the last 12 hours because only half of the patients they treated were insured. And as chief of staff, it is Peter's duty to think of the hospital's welfare, a word choice that teased Michael up to say he thought they were supposed to attend to the welfare of their patients and save lives, which just teased Dr. Shulman up back. Clip 12.
How many lives did you save ordering the medevac helicopter for Amanda Woodward?
Two.
I'd love to see the charts. And Dr. Mancini, your recent $2 million sexual harassment suit that Dr. Burns was instrumental in settling, did that save lives too? Things are going to change around here, gentlemen. Be prepared. Mr. Denoff? She hates you. Why?
Well, it was a nasty fight to get this chief of staff job.
Yeah, someone tried to put her boy toy in as chief of staff. You know, she's basically just a tight-assed, power-hungry woman who wants her own way, which is to get Peter buried.
Will she get it?
No, don't worry. There's nothing Shulman can use against me.
I don't know, dude. Well, I guess we'll find out, though. Back to the complex. Amanda's arriving late to a meeting with a city building inspector who confirms that although we love her, Amanda is absolutely a slumlord. He can't sign off on the roof repair because buildings this size were supposed to have been brought up to code after the big quake, which I assume is the Northridge quake of 1994. If he doesn't sign off, she will lose her insurance. So she tries to bribe him with $100. We'll come back to this in a sec. The inspector says he has to report offers like that, which, okay, yes, but maybe he would have kept his mouth shut if she'd offered like $10,000. Like, I'm not saying do it. I'm saying this is Slumlord 101. Come on now.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Glad we agree.
I also don't think that Amanda, given her experience as a landlord and her upbringing, would not have someone at DOB.
Yes.
Who was already her guy.
Right.
I'm just saying.
Amanda backs off, claiming she was just asking to pay this guy for his expert advice, and he says she can postpone the reckoning if she can prove that she has work scheduled, but retrofitting the whole place is going to cost around $100,000. Oh, no! It's the money she needs to buy Kyle out of his problems with the house. Amanda, look at your finances, figure it out. But anyway, then it's dinner time with Peter and Eve, the latter feeling weird about being at home at night without a gig. Peter says they could go to bed early, have sex, watch the late show, have sex again, but Eve remains morose, so Peter says she doesn't need Kyle or Amanda. She's very talented. Don't know about that. Neither does Eve, at least. She adds that she and Amanda have been friends since they were kids. Eve was so busy being grateful for her friendship that she didn't realize she was jealous. And then there's a pounding on the door, and when Eve opens it, Jackie falls in, very badly beat up. The next day, Amanda finds Peter at the hospital to accept his breakfast invitation, but what he really wants is to make her forgive Eve. Amanda immediately turns and leaves, but Peter follows, saying Eve made a mistake. Amanda thinks it could have been subconscious, but that Eve wanted to hurt her. And if Eve needs Amanda, she should have thought of that before she tried to destroy her, and then gets on a conveniently timed elevator, and unlike Ryan that time in New York, Peter does not try to stop her and just lets her go with that perfect exit line. Just one of the many reasons Peter is better than Ryan. Elsewhere, Nurse Dina tells Michael the auditors are there for a surprise look at the books, which Michael doesn't care about until she mentions the Children's Foundation. And so then Michael enters what I assume is Peter's office to several accountants just pawing through everything. Sounding guilty as hell, Michael asks if they're going to be looking at every penny in all of the hospital accounts. And Auditor Bob says yes. And Michael shits a brick as he backs out, which you can see in the visual aids, gasping that he has to stop this, and he happens to lean on a wall directly beside a fire alarm, and his hand is inching towards it as an out-of-frame Peter bellows at him not to. So then Michael babbles about his fears of getting caught out with the foundation, but Peter curtly says he paid it back and refuses Michael's pathetically grateful hug because Peter didn't do it for him, was to give Dr. Shulman one less piece of ammunition against him, speaking of whom. She's walking through another hallway when something draws her attention. Clip 13.
Easy for you to say, doctor's wife. You know how long it took me to find that job?
I'll lend you money.
You know, at least in prison, you knew that you had a roof over your head and three meals a day. You figured who to stay away from so that you wouldn't get beat up.
Well, you did know your way around. Guards, cafeteria staff, they made my life a little easier.
You know, when they told me my second time in that I would be rooming with a murderer, I was shaking in my boots.
But you turned out okay.
So, Dr. Burns married an ex-con. Now it's not just indigents he wants to save, but murderers and thieves, too.
The man must have quite a savior complex.
You have no right to listen in on a
hospital business? Oh, but I do.
Another uninsured patient under Dr. Burns' care. As chief of staff, he should be more circumspect in his choice of spouses. Hey! You can't use my past against Peter. It's not fair.
I never let an opportunity slip by.
Okay.
I mean, like, was anyone clamoring for this bitch to come back? Truly.
No.
Well, when she has left, Jackie blames herself. Eve says she will take care of Dr. Schulman, but Jackie says Eve can't do anything that will get her incarcerated again. Jackie will handle it. Uh-oh. Hours later, Eve finds Peter in the hall and tells him Jackie's gone and also what Dr. Schulman overheard. Peter tells Eve he will deal with Dr. Schulman, but Eve is afraid Jackie's going to do something stupid. Speaking of something stupid, at Jane's housewarming party, off discussion about everyone being on top of each other at the complex, Kyle says he didn't want to bitch about that when they had nowhere else to go, but now they do. Their house on the beach, like, I don't think Amanda wants to camp out al fresco on the building site. Like, what are you talking about? You don't have walls. Like, never mind, you know, running water.
Also, from what we've seen, it is literally like you open the front door, take two steps, and you're on a road.
Yeah.
Like, no. Everything about this house is no. It's right. Never again.
No, it's true. And when we first saw them looking at it, it was like on a bluff, right?
Yeah.
And then now it's like they're building, you know, steps from the ocean. I don't know. They lost their original
that's
site.
That's a anyway. No thanks for me.
Same. So after Kyle offers to help Jane with her little construction project, as we already discussed, an increasingly tense Amanda asks Ryan, clip 14.
Did you look at my financial statements that I put on your desk?
Yeah, I had those clients to deal with. I thought they were a priority.
No, I'm your priority. I need to juggle paying for the retrofitting of the apartment building and find enough money to get our new house done quicker. I want an answer tomorrow.
No. No, not how that works. Ryan, quit. Go back to Poughkeepsie. Take Megan with you. Please, end this. It's dumb.
Mm-hmm. Back to the hospital where Peter walks out just in time for Jackie to stick a gun in Dr. Schulman's ribs. Clip 15.
Don't move, bitch.
Now turn around.
Oh, God, please don't. Please.
How does it feel?
Now you're scared. Now you shake.
It feels pretty rotten, doesn't it?
Jackie. Jackie, it's me, Peter. Honey, put the gun down. This isn't going to do any good.
Why shouldn't I just kill her? She's Eve's problem. She's your problem.
No, trust me now. I'll take care of Eve. Give me the gun.
I can't do that. I need her wheels. Car keys.
Jackie! Jackie, don't do this! Jackie, listen to me! Jackie! Are you all right?
Is that how you met your wife? She steal your Beamer? I'm gonna bury you, Burns. You're through.
How?
Yeah.
Like, I don't, you know, it's that is not his fault.
No. And, I mean, good luck making it his fault. I just wish that we had seen a, like, cut to Jackie carving Brooks was here into the dashboard.
Well, of
this car, but we don't.
So the next morning, Peter comes home and tells a frantic Eve that Jackie is still missing. He tried to keep Eve out of it with the cops, but he can only imagine what Dr. Schulman is going to tell the board. And also says this, clip 16.
I'm a good chief of staff.
No, you're not.
You're not great, you know.
You're a lot of things, and we like most of them and let the rest go, but that is not true.
Mm-mm. He says he's not going down without a fight. Eve blames herself, but Peter says they're not giving up an inch. He's going to show everyone how proud he is that Eve is his wife, and they're going to win. And Eve hugs him and probably wonders if they're going to come back to the subject of her friend who is totally on the lam for misguidedly trying to help her, but they don't in this scene. In the courtyard, Ryan takes a break from trying to go catch his plane to tell Amanda all the bad news about her finances. Clip 17.
You have a second mortgage on the building, which means you can't take out a third, and the only other option is to liquidate stocks, and the market is volatile right now, so that's not a good option.
So?
So it means that you're going to have to choose one or the other. I got to go.
What? This is not what I want to hear.
Amanda, do you have a patient bone in your body? Hold on to your assets, even ones with dicey heat and bad plumbing. Move into your dream house at Christmas. Is that so hard?
Yes.
You're going to have to learn to live with it.
This is a soap, y'all.
I'll say this for whatever his name is, John Hames Newton. That was a lot of exposition really quickly, and he got through it without stumbling, and that's more than I can say for a lot of lines we hear on this show, so good job.
Yeah, since he's sort of in a Billy-esque role here, that he does this 10 times better than Andrew Hsu would is good enough.
It's true. So then Amanda, defeated, flops against an exterior wall, which hilariously knocks a sconce loose, as you can see in the visual aids. That is really structurally unsound if it's the outside. Like, it's not like jostling a picture. Anyway, that night, Eve runs into Jackie in the courtyard and warns her that she may have to leave the country. Jackie knows where she needs to be. She stole the car because she wants to be locked up again. Brooks was here, like Sarah said. She doesn't know how to maneuver on the outside. Eve tries to convince her she's wrong, even though, like, she's going to be serving time again, regardless of how anyone feels about it or how much money Peter and Eve loan her for a lawyer. Jackie already called the cops on herself. She just wanted to say goodbye. Eve can make it. She can't give up. And Dr. Schulmington find her car at the bottom of the L.A. River. And Jackie surrenders with a lot of bravado. And we never saw her again. But thanks for stopping in and kind of obliquely making us think that Eve did some gay stuff in prison, because it's one of the only interesting things about her, to be completely honest.
Sure is.
Back at the complex, Amanda looks at the pool and has a flashback to the day that she told Alice and Billy and everybody else that she had bought the complex, and bless the editor who started the archival clip on Andrew Hsu making a very stupid face that you can see in the visual aids. In the present, Amanda tells Kyle she had big hopes and dreams for the building when she bought it, but she was using it to get into everyone's lives. Kyle notes that everyone ended up getting into hers instead, and Amanda goes on, clip 18.
Now, you'd think I'd have all these happy memories, but all I can think of are the bad things that happened here. Brooke dying in the pool.
Oh, yeah.
And Kimberly blowing up the place. You. The dark days.
Possessed by a building. You think it's possible?
It's possessed me. And you're right. It's wrecking our lives.
Yeah, I think it's doing more than that. I think it's wrecking our dreams. And I don't mean just financially. I want to finish our house. I want to have a family. I want to move into the house.
Okay. Was that written in the wrong order, or did Rob Estes fuck it up and they were like, we keep going, we can't stop? Because that's not...
Yeah. Could go either way. Probably the second thing, though.
They need to move out and move on. Cut to a storage room I did not know existed. Amanda's looking for something, and then she finds it, and it turns out to be a for sale sign for the complex, which she hangs on the gate. And Sarah, as the spouse of a real estate agent, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I think you have to tell the listing realtor this is happening before you just go ahead and start, you know, inviting people to call somebody.
Yeah, that was my first. That's my first instinct. Also that, you know, there's like rusty water stains on the sign. Like, not sure how whatever, you know, MacGuffin Realty feels about that, but. Ugh.
Yes. Ultimately, it doesn't matter. The point is, Melrose Place is for sale. And that's where you leave it for this week. Let's close it up by naming our episode MVP.
Sarah.
Funny.
She got to sleep through the whole thing for real.
It's true. I was going to say the nun who doesn't think Ryan's shit. So combination of those two. They're having a good time at the orphanage, I guess. Least valuable player. Kyle, stop.
Back for a limited time engagement. Billy.
Nice.
Next time on Again With This, Dawson's Creek edition. Looks like we can eliminate What About Bob from Dawson's favorite films syllabus as he learns about his mother's affair and the real reason Jen is doing time on Capeside Drive. Also, Pacey, Tamara, blech. Speaking of blech, it's our visual aids. Find them for this and every other episode of this podcast at againwiththispodcast.com. We are on Blue Sky at Again With This. We are on Instagram at Again With This Podcast, and you can call or text us 210-920-4699, and we really hope that you do. I'm anachronistic wimple Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is Medicare for All PSA Tara Ariano, and she's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer David T. Cole is a good chief of staff. Talk to you next time.
Rock!